The first question, who is your favorite superhero of all time? And type it in as one word so that it'll show up. Someone's trying to be funny. It seems like, this is a word cloud, so if a lot of people type it in one word, it'll get bigger. It seems like Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman are the top answers. You guys are big fans of DC Comics, aren't you? Let's move on to the next question, shouldn't we? How many of the 22 Marvel Cinematic Universe films have you seen? Seems like a lot of you have only seen 1 through 5. You guys should go to the movies more often, they're very good. And 22% seen all 22 of them. You guys are true fans. Next question. Which superpower would be most helpful to you on a daily basis? Oh boy, a lot of you is teleporting. DC traffic has been bad lately, hasn't it? And then flight and super speed. All right, next question. Can you name this non-fictional character? No, it's not the Spider-Man in the background, it's the guy. A lot of you said yes. That's good. All right. This one was a bit tricky for some of you. Diehard fans would know that he is Stan Lee, creator of many Marvel heroes. My family are, of course, diehard fans, as we'll see in a few seconds. So we would say yes. But thank you for participating.
Hello?
Hello?
It's good? Can you hear me? Good morning. Can you hear me? Okay, good. My name is Tinica. Sorry. We are going to do this kind of unusually, so we're going to be tag-teaming this Sunday, this morning message as a family. We're going to do it together, and we're doing the movie Doctor Strange, so I hope most of you got a chance to see it. If not, it's worth it, and you can watch it sometime in the next couple of weeks when you have more time off in the summer. Matthew mentioned last week that movies are a really cool way, a modern platform to share stories. And there's, of course, movies that are just for fun, and we had a lot of fun watching this movie. It may seem kind of silly to do a comic book movie or a superhero movie for a Sunday message, but the four of us watched it, picked out some themes that spoke to us, and we hope they speak to you too. So due mostly to Steve's influence, and now as Will's getting older, his influence too, we see a lot of comic book movies in the Mather household, Marvel Universe in particular. The movies have been a really relevant way for the four of us to connect across our generations. We have lively family debates about the storylines, about characters, about how much money is spent on the movies. We talk about cinematography, about how women and men are portrayed or humans are portrayed compared to superheroes. We talk about diversity, our lack of diversity. We talk about the award shows, soundtracks, and kind of everything in between. We've organized big groups of our neighbors and friends to go see the movie together. We've decorated our house with comic books. Our playroom has a whole wall full. And I am a natural purger of things. I like to get rid of things, but we have boxes and boxes of comic books in our house. So that's kind of a little intro to us. Will's going to come up and get us started.
Good morning. Good morning. So, hi, I'm Will. After first watching Doctor Strange, it was quickly one of my favorite Marvel movies. It's a great movie that's full of emotion, action, and has great special effects. because of the special effects, it was compared to movies like The Matrix and Inception that have very, like, mind-bending, that breaks the laws of physics, like imagery shown. The character Doctor Strange comes from a comic book that was released in the 1960s. If you're a diehard fan, you know that this movie has some deviations from the original storyline and character art, but that doesn't really matter. So we're going to now watch the first clip where it starts off in a New York hospital where Dr. Stephen Strange is a very talented neurosurgeon.
Billy, while Feel So Good may have charted in 1978, the album was released in December of 1977.
No, Wikipedia says it's a
check
19...
again.
Where do you store all this useless information?
Useless? The man charted a top 10 hit with a flugelhorn. Status, Billy?
1977.
Oh, please. I hate you.
Boom! Feels so good, doesn't it?
Oh, I got this, Stephen. You've done your bit. Go ahead. We'll close up.
What is it?
GSW.
Amazing, kept him alive. Apneic for the brainstem test and the apnea reflex test. I think I found the problem, Dr. Palmer. He left a bullet in his head.
Thanks. It's impinging on the medulla. I needed a specialist. Nick diagnosed brain death. Something about that doesn't feel right to me.
We have to run.
Dr. West, what are you doing?
Hey. Organ harvest. He's a donor.
Slow down. I did not agree to that.
I don't need you to. We've already called brain death.
Prematurely. We need to get him prepped for a suboccipital craniotomy.
Not going
to
let you operate on a dead man.
What do you see?
A bullet?
A perfect bullet. It's being hardened. You harden a bullet by alloying lead with antimony. Toxic metal. Now that's leached directly into the cerebral spinal fluid.
Rapid onset central nervous system shutdown.
You gotta go.
The patient's not dead, but he is dying. Still want to harvest his organs.
I'll assist you.
No. Dr. Palmer will assist me.
Thank you. Image guidance stat.
We don't have time for that.
This isn't a time for showing off, Strange.
How about 10 minutes ago when you called the wrong time of death? Cranial nerves intact. Dr. West, cover your watch.
So as you saw in that clip, he's pretty arrogant, but he's also very good at what he does. He's a bit removed from the people around him, and he's always in control of all the situations he's involved in. He has no need for help. Asking for help and relying on others are two themes that I'll come back to in a bit.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Stephen Strange, Steve Mather. So we just saw that clip. As Will said, we see the character as a very talented, arrogant, self-reliant person. Early on in the film, we see a lot of that. The next clip we want to share with you is a moment that we find him driving, speeding along the road in his high-end Lamborghini. He's rushing off to a conference where he's the keynote speaker. He becomes distracted. He's looking at a screen while he's driving, and that leads to a terrible car crash. He's gravely injured as a result of that accident, and in particular, both of his hands are severely damaged. Despite multiple surgeries, treatments, he's unable to do just basic life skills, let alone return back to that complex surgery that we saw there in that scene. Let's take a look at what happens to Dr. Strange after his awakening from the car crash.
Rushed you in a chopper, but it took a little while to find you. The golden hours for nerve damage went by while you were in the car.
What did they do?
11 stainless steel pins in the bones. Multiple torn ligaments. Severe nerve damage in both hands. You were on the table for 11 hours.
Look at these fixators.
No one could have done better.
I could have done better.
So as you can see in that clip, as well as the other ones that we've already seen, a major theme in this film is time. The speed, the pace of time throughout the story is anything but conventional. In some moments, you feel that time passes very slowly, while in other scenes, time passes very quickly. There are moments throughout this movie, as Will said, that really kind of play with your mind. Time is bent, it's folded, it's reversed, it's controlled in all sorts of ways. But it's difficult to know just how much time passes from that scene through the rest of Doctor Strange's healing process. We're going to see a few images here, bits and pieces of that painful journey that Doctor Strange goes through. We know that a frustrated Doctor Strange has focused all of his time, all of his energy, on trying to heal from this terrible accident, but finds no success.
For all of Dr. Strange's genius and research, he's stuck. After exhausting every lead he can think of, he pulls all of his money, goes to Kathmandu, after learning about a mystic healer that's there who had intervened in another person who had similar kind of catastrophic nerve damage. That person was able to heal. Dr. Strange met him and was inspired and goes to Kathmandu. Upon his arrival, he meets a character named Mordo, and Mordo takes him to meet the Ancient One, and we're going to see that clip now.
The Ancient One.
Thank you, Master Mordo. Thank you, Master Hamir. Mr. Strange.
Doctor, actually.
Well, no, not anymore, surely. Isn't that why you're here? You've undergone many procedures. 7, right?
Yeah. It's good tea. Did you heal a man named Pangborn, a paralyzed man?
In a way.
You helped him to walk again?
Yes.
How did you correct a complete C7, C8 spinal cord injury?
Well, I didn't correct it. He couldn't walk. I convinced him that he could.
You're not suggesting it was psychosomatic.
When you reattach a severed nerve, is it you who heals it back together or the body?
It's the cells.
And the cells are only programmed to put themselves back together in very specific ways.
Right.
What if I told you that your own body could be convinced to put itself back together in all sorts of ways?
You're talking about cellular regeneration. That's bleeding-edge medical tech. Is that why you're working here without a governing medical board? I mean, just how experimental is your treatment?
Quite.
So you figured out a way to reprogram nerve cells to self-heal?
No, Mr. Strange. I know how to reorient the spirit to better heal the body.
the spirit to heal the body. All right, how do we do that? Where do we start?
Don't like that map?
Oh, no, it's really good. It's just, you know, I've seen it before in gift shops.
And what about this one?
Acupuncture, great.
Yeah? What about that one?
You're showing me an MRI scan. I do not believe this.
Each of those maps was drawn up by someone who could see in part, but not the whole.
I spent my last dollar getting here. One-way ticket, and you're talking to me about healing through belief.
You're a man looking at the world through a keyhole, and you spent your whole life trying to widen that keyhole, to see more, to know more. And now, on hearing that it can be widened in ways you can't imagine, you reject the possibility.
No, I reject it.
So I have not experienced quite the injury that Dr. Strange has. But as my friends know, I use the phrase, I am broken, on a daily basis, pretty often. I've experienced a few injuries along my 41-year-long journey, relational hurts, physical hurts, and some spiritual disappointments, too. Where in most areas in my life, I feel pretty open to the world and open to possibility, I think life has taken a big toll on my faith, honestly, and I feel a bit banged up. I've gone from somebody who in years past found it very easy to connect to God to somebody who has been pretty guarded against it more recently, and honestly, I'm a bit cynical of it all. It's been hard to reconcile my lived experiences and a lot of the things I see happening in the world with a God that feels really present to me. At church and kind of churchy things, my intellect or brain often shouts, like, this just can't be real. I very much relate to Dr. Strange. Bridging the gap between something that's unseen and something very tangible for me has been difficult, a bit like this familiar guy. So I'm going to read a little scripture. From John 20, but Thomas, sometimes called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples told him, we saw the master. But he said, unless I see the nail holes in his hands, put my finger in the nail holes and stick my hand in his side, I won't believe it. 8 days later, his disciples were again in the room, and this time Thomas was with them. Jesus came through the locked doors, stood among them and said, peace to you. And then he focused his attention on Thomas. Take your finger and examine my hands. Take your hand and stick it in my side. Don't be unbelieving. Believe. And Thomas said, my master, my God. For a good portion of the movie, I actually don't like Dr. Strange. However, like I said, I can very much relate to his response to the Ancient One, a response of disbelief. And doubt is totally normal, of course, and I've never felt discouraged here at Cedar Ridge or with my friends or in my D group to grapple with doubt and kind of engage with it. However, my healthy doubt more recently in many ways has turned into something else. My cynicism has brought me closer to Dr. Strange than I would like to admit. I've looked down on those who are really unquestioning about their beliefs. I've used cynicism as a way to kind of shield myself. And I've been pretty cocky and arrogant at times and to feel stuck like Dr. Strange. The Ancient One tells Dr. Strange, you're looking at the world through a keyhole, and you think you know how the world works. And in the past, I don't normally think, I don't know how the world works, I would readily admit that, but I think in the past, I've been more open to try to figure it out, and recently I've just been quick to say what I think doesn't work. Dr. Strange touches on themes of awakening and transformation, things we explore often here at Cedar Ridge, and I'm going to read a little piece of the vision, which should feel pretty familiar to you. Imagine a community of peace and safety, where it's possible to shelter from the frenzied pace of life in order to slow down and explore the mystery and meaning of our existence, where we can take time to address the roots of our anxieties and pain, a place of hope where we can find help and healing, the power to change, no matter how desperate our situation. So I believe in this and have experienced this and know that it's real. But I am hard to kind of quiet in most social situations, and in my brain, my own heart and head, I'm also hard to quiet. So I have voices and a narrative that are often kind of louder than the rest, so louder than faith, more a narrative of disbelief. Silencing my inner self can be rough going, and leaning into God for me has been tough. Putting aside my ego and being willing to wholeheartedly believe again, I just haven't quite got there yet. And in this next clip, you'll see, until this moment, Dr. Strange wasn't quite ready to believe the Ancient One either. I will give you a warning. There's one mild cuss word in the beginning. I apologize if that's... hopefully we can get past that. So let's take a look at this next clip.
Oh, you think you see through me, do you? Well, you don't. But I see through you!
I pushed your astral form out of your physical form.
What's in that tea? Psilocybin? LSD?
It's just tea. With a little honey.
What just happened?
For a moment, you entered the astral dimension.
What?
A place where the soul exists apart from the body.
Why are you doing this to me?
To show you just how much you don't know. Open your eyes.
His heart rate is getting dangerously high.
He looks all right to me.
So the clip goes on for a few minutes. It's actually a pretty long clip. Trippy swirling in this kind of psychedelic moment. He, like you saw, is very afraid and panicking, as I think we all would be if we were zoomed through this kind of multi-universe. But he begins to settle. He succumbs to the experience as much as you could. And when arriving back into the room after that whole thing is kind of wraps up, the first things he says to Mordo and the Ancient One are, "Teach me more." So I do try to be a lifelong learner, and one of the ways I do that is I listen to public radio and podcasts all the time, a ton, probably to the dismay of my friends who I tell them all about it. Recently, though, I heard an interview about an interview with an author and researcher looking at how the mind transforms. So Michael Pollan, you might recognize some of his other books. I put some slides up. He wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma and In Search of Food. But recently he had a growing interest in a research study in which people with terminal cancer were given a psychedelic called psilocybin, which Dr. Strange mentions it in the movie. It's an active ingredient in magic mushrooms, I want to go on the record that I'm not recommending that any of us do magic mushrooms. So if we can push back past that part just a little bit, he wrote a book called How to Change Your Mind, and it explores the concepts that when humans experience a kind of a transcendent experience, they transform. We escape from the physical self for a moment, we're stretched, time slows, and our senses sharpen, and we're forced to listen. When she tried to explain her work, Dr. Strange tries to wrap his head around what she's doing very practically and scientifically. He does the opposite of listening, and in that moment, if you remember, he asks about cell regeneration and cutting-edge medical techniques. That's how he figures she must be engaging with the people around her and by the people she's helping. Michael Pollan in the book, he also takes an initially scientific approach when it comes to transformation of the mind. And he came to the conclusion, a scientific conclusion, that when we get outside of ourselves, we're actually physically changed. So people who meditate on a regular basis, for example, their brains are measurably different, similar to athletes. But Pollan also remarked in the interview and in his book that there's a less measurable outcome when it comes to those kinds of experiences, and he admitted that there's some mystery in it. And to try to get a handle on some of the anecdotal change that he had and some of the outside, less scientific, measurable results, he asked his wife about his growth, which I think is a very good way to figure out if you're growing or not. You should ask your spouse. So anyway, his wife noticed that after he had experienced his own transformation, that his kind of typically rigid thinking started to change. He was more empathetic to the people around him. He had a different outlook on the future and was more at peace. So for our intents and purposes, I'm not, again, recommending at all that we go on some kind of chemical trip. But what I am saying is that God can move in us, and I'm talking really more about the Spirit moving in us. So I do, despite my doubt, experience moments when the material world kind of takes a back seat to the spiritual, when I'm able to let go I've experienced those with spiritual practices here at Cedar Ridge, particularly in nature, with music, prayer and meditation and service. In those moments, I'm able to escape from my cynicism for just a bit and can just be in the presence of God or something larger than myself. The Ancient One instructs Dr. Strange that if we silence our ego, a different power can work in and through us. And so I haven't experienced that kind of trippy, swirly moment quite the same, but I have had experiences when my brain has quieted a little bit and I'm able to hear God's spirit, at least a nudge of it for the time being. One thing that I think is especially cool about Dr. Strange's portrayal in the movie is that he doesn't have just a one-time moment where he experiences that crazy trip, realizes there's something bigger than himself, and then from the rest of the movie, he's totally fine and good and checks off his boxes and is a believer completely. But again and again, he keeps going back to the spirit. He engages with it, wrestles with it. He breaks the rules a lot. He breaks the Ancient One's rules a lot in the movie, but he's kind of humbled each time. He seeks the reconnection, and in doing so, he has a continual transformation through the movie. So it's not just he becomes a superhero and everything's done and dusted, but he keeps going and grows along the way. So I hope to do that on my journey. I think it's happening. I know that faith isn't static. I wish it was a lot easier for me. But I know it means I can get unstuck. I hope to reconnect with God's spirit again and again on my own journey, seeking God when I feel distant. So I have a quick psalm I'm going to read, and then I'm almost done. I'm going to wrap up, and Will's going to take over. So how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? Or in my case, probably more me hiding my face from God. How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord, my God. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death, and my enemy will say, I've overcome him or her, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. And I do feel that. I cannot imagine what a story or movie depiction of my life would look like. I talked to my family, and we decided it'd be about PG-13 plus. I'd have some twists and turns, and I'm hoping that mine would reflect a journey that looks like Doctor Strange, that it would be continual and growing. That's how I feel. Opening my mind more to a power that's bigger than myself. And then I'm going to end with one last scripture. And I do believe this, that I'm convinced that neither death nor life, angels or demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, or anything else in creation, including my own doubt and narrative, will be able to separate me from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. All right, Willow.
So after all this growth that Dr. Strange has experienced with the Ancient One, he begins to see that the world around him is much more complex than he imagined. He also sees that it isn't something he's mastered quite yet. He continues to train at the Ancient One's Academy alongside those that are much more skilled than he is. On many occasions, he's failed, and this humbles him to realize that he doesn't have all the answers or skills. While he's still on the search for a solution to fix the nerve damage in his hands, he begins to join those around him in a larger story, not just to fix his own problems. He somewhat reluctantly gets pulled into fighting against some people that are trying to manipulate the same spiritual realm that he learned to access his powers from. Unfortunately, he's still a beginner and not very good at fighting. In the next scene that we're about to watch, he doesn't ask for help, but he's given it by an unusual source.
To die in with Vamug, Vava Gruz.
What?
Ashaloin Rebel, Vava Gruva.
Ludayan. Oh, stop it. Sava. He said stop it. You cannot stop.
So in this clip, he's given help by the cloak of levitation, and it's what helps him win that fight. As a 16-year-old teenager, I'm kind of halfway between childhood and adulthood. I'm a full-time student and an athlete that plays on different teams. Over the summer, I'm working as a camp counselor that works with, like, third-grade kids. So I'm very used to, like, student-teacher, coach-athlete, and parent-child roles. One thing that I kind of often struggle with is asking those leaders for help, whether it's in school to fix a bad grade or help retake a test, whether it's with a coach to practice something new, or going to parents if I'm dealing with something new or unusual. Even though I may not admit it, some wisdom and help would be much needed. For some reason, I hesitate and find it difficult to rely on others until it's kind of the last minute. I'm not quite as cocky as Dr. Strange. I don't try to put people as down the way he does, but I do relate to his struggle in asking for help. What tends to happen is I don't seek help, and then it often spirals into a much worse problem than it would be if I just asked for help in the beginning. Throughout the movie, Dr. Strange continues to evolve and become stronger in the spiritual arts. He still does not have the full use of his hands. He then gets in with Mordu, the Ancient One. They all are involved in a big fight against those evil powers seen early in the movie, and the Ancient One is severely injured. Dr. Strange knows that he doesn't have all the abilities to save her with his still damaged hands, and this time he needs to ask for help.
Christine!
Are you kidding me? Oh, my God.
It's not fibrillation. She has a stunned myocardium.
You know, Dennis?
Yes. Nick. We need to relieve the pressure on her brain.
All right. Go ahead. Now pull us in.
We're losing her.
We need to increase her oxygen.
I need a crash cart.
Her pupils have dilated. No.
So in that scene, that's a really big turning moment for Dr. Change. The doctor who he hands the scalpel to is the doctor from the beginning of the movie who he publicly humiliated. This is the doctor that he also blamed for his botched recovery. In this moment, we see how much he's changed from the original part of the movie, and this is a part of his character development that you really have to root for. I have a younger sister and a younger cousin who is basically like a younger brother. I work with children every day. I don't get frustrated when they reach out and ask for help to rely on me. I know that needing help isn't a weakness. I'm not going to read something from President Obama where he advocates for asking for help. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask for help when you need it. I do that every single day. Asking for help isn't a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength. It shows that you have the courage to admit when you don't know something and want to learn something new. I think if Dr. Strange can learn to ask for help, I can too.
I'm not going to get that applause, Will. That's not fair. We have two more clips. Really, this movie has so much more that we could talk about, spend time looking at. I want to jump to a very important moment in the story. We already saw when Dr. Strange first meets the Ancient One. This following scene is where they have their final encounter. Let's take a look.
I've spent so many years peering through time, looking at this exact moment, but I can't see past it. I've prevented countless terrible futures, and after each one, there's always another, and they all lead here, but never further.
You think this is where you die?
You wonder what I see in your future?
No. Yes?
I never saw your future, only its possibilities. You have such a capacity for goodness. You always excelled, but not because you craved success, but because of your fear of failure.
It's what made me a great doctor.
It's precisely what kept you from greatness. Arrogance and fear still keep you from learning the simplest and most significant lesson of all.
Which is?
It's not about you. When you first came to me, you asked me how I was able to heal Jonathan Pangborn. I didn't. He channels dimensional energy directly into his own body.
He uses magic to walk.
Constantly. He had a choice. to return to his own life or to serve something greater than himself.
So I could have my hands back again. My old life.
You could. And the world would be all the lesser for it. I've hated drawing power from the dark dimension. But as you well know, sometimes one must break the rules in order to serve the greater good.
Mordo won't see it that way.
Mordo's...
So this is such a moment where you can see, even though we've only shown you a few minutes of the movie, Doctor Strange has undergone such a transformation. He's gone on such a journey from, you know, I'm the best doctor there is and I'm above everything else around me, to finally being humble and inquisitive and asking for that help, asking for that information from the Ancient One. Another reason why that scene is so touching and soul-stirring to me is because, as we heard, it's a teacher and student moment. It's a moment where not only we're losing the Ancient One, this wise, revered, devoted leader, but we're losing, you know, this perfect teacher for this student, and he's starting to come to grips with that reality. She does pass after they finish this conversation, and there's three things I'd like to really point out real quickly before we go to our final scene. This movie explores so many aspects of reality. One very obvious, very blatant one is time. I even remembered, I was sitting there just a moment ago, the first thing I said to everybody here this morning was, good morning. That's a very timely word. Morning, you know, is a time of day. If you counted the number of times that this movie has the word, the English word time, 41 times. I can't even stop saying the word, right? So if you search throughout the film, it's weaving this aspect of our reality. Some of us might call it the fourth dimension. Some of us might call it, you know, something else, and kind of like a constant throughout all of our lives, all of our reality, time. But it takes it in all these different directions. Part of that is not just the time stone. So for those of you who earlier on the poll said you've watched all 22 MCU films, which I'm very impressed with, you'll know that Time Stone is a piece of the Marvel Universe, and we could spend 3 hours talking about that. Anybody want to stay for 3 more hours? I don't think so. Johannes does. Thank you. but yeah, it just takes time. It takes this aspect of reality, time. Doctor Strange was already fascinated with it, but sees it in a new way, is willing to open his mind, change his perspective, mostly based on the Ancient One's perspective, and see what this piece of reality might be beyond what I already know or what he already knows. Another point, this film does such an amazing job of bringing together two very different or opposite aspects of our reality, the classic Western philosophy throughout history and the classic Eastern approach or philosophy. Right there, that's a great moment where you see Dr. Strange changing from, he's such a self-accomplished science-based doctor, now opening himself up to the spiritual realm, the other dimension, the mystical. And instead of being the person who needs to know, how does this work? Step A, step B, step C. He's finding a way to harmonize things that are out there in the natural order with what he thinks he already knows, embracing what he doesn't yet know. And I feel like the way that the people make this film really deliver on that really challenging task. The last point I wanted to make is coming back to reality. We heard a little bit about Tinica's journey. Will shared a bit about his. We all have our own journeys. That's something we talk a lot about here at Cedar Ridge. But this film is such a great example of a character, albeit fictional, showing a journey from where he was, what he goes through, pain, loss, such adversity, and then bringing to the end. So even though this is a superhero movie, I feel like we've only seen a couple of scenes where it feels kind of supernatural or superhero-like. We're going to see one more scene, and this is very superhero. Doctor Strange gets to the point where he has to make some kind of decision, and he so much relies on what he's learned from the Ancient One. He's going to go off and face this giant, planet-eating, evil, dark dimension monster called... Anybody? Thank you. We got it right up here, Dormammu. I'm not going to talk too much about that, but you'll see how does Doctor Strange face this terrible challenge, this huge, not just threat to him, but threat to all of humanity. Let's take a look at this scene at the very end of the movie.
World beyond time. Beyond death. long time. Strange!
Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
You've come to die. Your world is now my world. Like all worlds.
Mamu, I've come to bargain.
You've come to die. Your world is now mine. What is this? Illusion?
No, this is real. Dormammu, I've come to bargain. Just as you gave Caecilius powers from your dimension, I brought a little power from mine. This is time. Endless, looped time.
Elf.
Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
You cannot do this forever.
Actually, I can. This is how things are now. You and me, trapped in this moment, endlessly.
We'll spend eternity dying.
Yes. But everyone on Earth will live.
But you will suffer.
Pain's an old friend.
Dormammu! I've come to bargain. Dormammu! Dormammu! Dormammu!
No, but I could lose again and again and again and again forever.
So what a moment, okay? I think superhero movies, when I was little, they meant that the character, the main character, would become so strong, so smart, so powerful that they wipe out the enemy. They remove the threat. This is not that same ending, in my view. Of course, there are many different ways to see how this is intended to be, but I see Doctor Strange becoming kind of the opposite of who he was at the beginning of that journey. He's opened up not only to the Ancient One and learned so many things from her, he's also learned this pretty special ability to manipulate time with that time stone and that thing, that green kind of pattern on you saw on his wrist. All that was things that he learned for sure. Without those, he'd be in big trouble, I think. That's for sure. But it seems he's gotten to a point where he's willing to do two things that I see, at least. Not win. Okay, so he's used to being the top doctor, and nobody can question him. Now he's going to go off into space and be gone forever. Nobody on Earth will know what he's doing, and he's not going to win. He's going to lose endlessly. Okay, so he's lost his grip on being all about himself winning, being first. He's also willing to sacrifice himself. That's even further a step from where he started his journey in this story. He's willing to suffer, go through endless pain so that the rest of humanity can be safe. Again, if we had time, we can make connections between that story and so many other characters, also people in our history that we look up to, also Jesus himself. I think we could draw so many parallels. We don't have time to do that today, but we'll just leave that on the table. But I do want to add one last comment, and then we'll move on to communion. Being a part of this community has opened up a space for many of us, I want to say myself for sure, to go through a journey like that, where we start off where we are, wherever we are at that moment, and we're welcomed into a community. We're welcomed into a space, into a time where we can go through this journey, some of it on our own, some of it with each other. I have gone through, you know, rough times. I've gone through amazing experiences as part of this community. What this place helps me do is remain open, continue to consider other perspectives, right? If Dr. Strange had not been open to the Ancient One, that would not have happened. That journey would not have happened. I feel very much the same has happened for me here, I think for many of us. So I'm going to ask Violet to come up and move us into a time of communion.
Now we come to the time of the service where we share communion together.